Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to The Midpoint with me, Gabby Logan. I have a first for you on the podcast this week. This is the first time my celebrity guest and my expert guest are also a married couple. Former footballer Gary Neville and his wife Emma are on the team sheet this week. It's rare these days, but Gary played his whole 20-year career at one club, his beloved Manchester United. He was part of the famous class of 92, and when he retired in 2011, he held 8 Premier League titles, 3 FA Cups, 2 Champions League wins, and a string of other titles, not to mention his 85 caps for England. Since then, he's turned his hand to football coaching, established himself as a businessman and a straight-talking pundit. Emma has dedicated her life to helping others as a counsellor, philanthropist, and in recent years, a menopause coach. She launched her online community, This Is Me, to try to help women navigate this tricky stage of life. So I thought she'd be the perfect expert for us. Apparently Gary's favourite word is relentless, as it sums up his approach to life. So buckle up. Let's meet the Nevilles. Well, what a treat for the Midpoint listeners to have Gary and Emma Neville with us today. And you know what, Emma? I'm so happy to meet you because I've been asking Gary to come on for ages. And then I saw a post he did about your work as a menopause counsellor. And I thought, hey ho, this is a way I can get him on because he can bring his wife with him. So you know what he needs? A security blanket of you to be here. That's what I've discovered he needed. So welcome. How are you both?
Good.
Yeah.
A little bit nervous.
Yeah, I've got a cold, so I might sound a bit, all over the show, but anyway.
And you're also in separate rooms recording this, we should say. So this is quite interesting. You're in the same house, so you can't give each other those visual cues which say, just shut up, you've said enough now about that, which is excellent for me. Well, Emma, you are obviously the partner and wife of somebody who's gotten a huge profile and has done for many decades now and is very, very well known. But what you do is really interesting and kind of behind the scenes almost. You know, I hadn't realised how much you were doing as a counsellor and working in that space for a long time. But I guess, you know, being married to any Neville is quite a job, isn't it? Being married to the Neville family, he describes himself as relentless. So give us a taste, give us a kind of idea what it is like being a partner to somebody with so much energy, enthusiasm and passion.
Tiring at times, but yeah, always attached to an itinerary, I'd say. Most days are, set out. So I've adapted into that lifestyle. The Neville family are never, never late. So that was a huge point for me, that I was someone who was okay on time, but now I've had to be, prompt, they arrive early to everything. So, I've had to adapt into this routine and regime of the Neville lifestyle. But yeah, I feel like, Gary is just, relentless, 1,000 miles an hour. He does so many things. I don't know how his brain functions some days, but he does it. And he's built completely different than anyone I've met. But yeah, for me, I'm obviously complete opposite, yin-yang, and more of the, quiet person, very philanthropic, an empath. And yeah, so I suppose we bring out different sides in each other.
Yeah, and it's working. It was interesting. I'd met your sister, Tracy. I met her a few times, Gary, but I'd done something with her just a few weeks ago. And she was saying that you live quite centrally in Manchester. And I said, oh, how does that work for Emma and the kids? And she said, well, that's what Gary wants. So,
that's not true.
I think that. Yeah.
Well, it painted a picture that, I guess in every relationship, somebody does set the agenda and the other person kind of works with the agenda, or you kind of say, look, I've got this. Would you say you're that person then, Gary, that people work around you?
No, I wouldn't like to say that. Emma's laughing. To be fair, I think on houses, so me and Emma lived in Manchester when we first met for 3 or 4 years, and we really enjoyed it in Manchester. And then we moved back up to Bolton, just on sort of border with Bury, where is obviously where I grew up and near where my mum and dad lived. And we enjoy it up there as well. But it started to take me about an hour and 20 minutes into Manchester every day and an hour and 20 minutes back. And it was becoming incredibly frustrating. And the kids now are 15 and 14. I was starting to get to the point whereby they're going to probably want sort of like a central Manchester life. It's where the jobs are, it's where education is. And I was just getting tired of driving in and out. So we do mix it a little bit between Manchester and Bolton. I do what I want to do, Gabby. And I think that's really important in life. And I also want Emma to do what she wants to do. And I want the kids to do what they want to do. So I don't think stopping people doing what they want to do or sort of saying, you must sacrifice this for me. You know, if Emma wants to go and sort of do a counselling course for 3 years, or if she wants to go on holiday with a friend, or if I want to go and sort of do a business idea, I think we should encourage each other to do what we want to do within the relationship. Mm. I suspect I am more domineering from a point of view just personality-wise, but that's, I think Emma, to be fair, in the last, I would say, 5-6 years, the kids have grown up, they need less attention, and I would say Emma's now certainly becoming more dominant and more focused on what she wants to do as well.
Yeah, and Emma, that involves, as Gary described there, you did a 3-year counselling course and you've worked with lots of different charities practically, not just donating sums of money and doing things, kind of rolling your sleeves up and getting involved with those things. How important was that for you in terms of identity? Because, you know, you could be swamped, couldn't you, by the personality that is Gary Neville and the world that he has and just go along with the ride. Was there a conscious decision to forge your own path in that respect?
Yeah, I do feel, you know, as you become a mum, you do start to lose your identity. And I wanted to be that mum that was hands-on, take them to nursery, take them to school, you know, pick them up, be there all the way for them. And that was, you know, it's the best job in the world for me. And probably most mums can agree with that. But then I've always wanted to do counselling since I was in my 20s. And I think just life experiences, I realise now, you know, have brought me different attributes into that environment. So I'm really glad that I didn't do it in my 20s. So then I went on and I thought, I really need to do this. And I kind of had a lot of people and a lot of friends who would always confide in me. And they'd always say, oh, you're a really good listener. And, you know, I just felt like, I'm going to try it. I'm going to go for this. So yeah, I did. I went to study and I did it. And I was really proud of myself. I finished it in lockdown, which I never thought I'd achieve because it was just hell on earth, like for most people. I'm such an in-the-room person when I do studying or anything, and the classroom was taken away from me, so it was all back online. So, you know, learning all those new skills and everything. But I got there, and I was really proud of myself. And like you say, I, you know, work with many charities, but I'm not somebody, you know, I'm very privileged that I could say, yeah, I'll, you know, become a patron to this, or I can give you this amount of money. But for me, it's the hands-on involvement. I love going into the spaces and seeing what actually goes on in that, you know, environment. And that is where my counselling journey led me to, yeah. So at the moment, I'm in a cancer centre. And, you know, that brings me so much joy, along with people say, how can you do it? But also, we have to, you know, take on this role and leave that in the room as we've finished and just be privileged that we've been in that room with that person and they've shared with you as a counsellor. It's one of the most privileging jobs, I feel, that it's brings me, yeah, lots and lots of, you know, joy. Don't get me wrong, I like to rescue people and I do think about lots of clients, but it's hard to sometimes, you know, when you are an empathic person, not to just leave it there, but you do have to, you know, look after yourself because you can get that burnout as well. So, yeah.
So, Gary, did you notice a change in Emma when she went through that course?
Yeah, I know the change before it was that, you know, it's not easy when you're so busy, when I was so busy doing everything that I wanted to do. And then sometimes I would come home and Emma would talk about sort of like use words like sometimes worthless or value or, you know, what am I doing? I don't know what I stand for anymore. You know, when I first met Emma, she had a job in jewellery wholesale for a good few years. And then we had the kids and obviously that fell away. And then obviously I think from that point, the kids did, because the kids were sort of 15 months between each other, 16 months between each other. So it was quite an intense period for say 5, 6, 7 years. And I started to hear words like that worthless, you know, what am I doing with my life? You know, those types of phrases. And it isn't easy listening to someone obviously that you're married to and that you love say those things, because the reality of it is then, you know, she had to go and if you like, I said, well, what do you want to do? You know, I'm quite matter of fact, Gabby, as you can imagine, and sort of would say, right, so what is it you want to do? Mm. And we can make it happen. And I think it's taken a lot for her in the last couple of months to launch the This Is Me page, because she isn't, she doesn't really want the attention. She's quite very private. She's always prided herself on saying that I'm a private person. But I think that it's taken a lot for her to get to that point. And I did see a change in her that sort of with the counselling courses, get more confident, going down to the cancer centre on a regular basis, doing the work that she's doing and feeling that actually she's contributing and that she's doing something she wants to do, which is absolutely amazing. You know, the idea that she goes down and sort of impacts people's lives who are suffering is fantastic. But there definitely was a change before. And then all of a sudden, when the counselling courses started, I saw Emma get more confident, and now to a point whereby, you know, to come on here today, really, I think for both of us, but certainly for Emma, is a big thing. You know, even in the last 24 hours, she would say, "Are you sure this is right?" And obviously she wanted to do it because she admires you, and obviously she knows about the podcast. But I'd say the growth in the last 4 or 5 years has been incredible, really, from that point of view of when she decided that she was going to go for it.
There's a few things to unpick there. And one of the first thing you said, you know, because you're a matter-of-fact person, I think a lot of people listening to this will totally appreciate Emma's position. And it might not always be the woman in the relationship, but when one person really feels they are lost and they kind of don't have that purpose and the other person seems to have so much drive and so much direction, you know, it's very easy to think, well, just find something, you know, what, just do something. And you know the person you're with as well is clever, and, you know, has real enormous potential, and you want them to kind of flourish and help elevate them. So, you know, that's something to navigate, isn't it? And then obviously then that person does kind of find that thing and gets going, and it can change dynamics in relationships, can't it? So do you think your relationship, Emma, is stronger for you finding that path and you having the thing that you know really makes you feel fulfilled?
Good question. I feel like, yeah, it's made me stronger and it's made me appreciate how well I can do things and what I do bring to the table. And, you know, like anything in life, I think if you're all in a good place, you know, it impacts everything from
the kids,
you know,
yeah,
kids, you know, everybody around you. So definitely it's there has been growth there. I sometimes feel like, you know, like Gary is, you know, like you say, the outspoken, but don't get me wrong, I give as good as I get. And I'm very vocal in lots of other ways. So, yes.
What would you say you... Because I think we've all got our strengths in relationships, haven't we? You know, and there's certain areas that I would think, oh, he might know a bit more about, or his opinion on this might be a bit more developed, if you like, than me, or other things I think I would have the kind of, you know, the reign over. Where do you think your strengths in the relationship are?
For me, I think I feel like I'm a really organised person, as much as Gary is very organised as well as mine, but I feel like I bring the daily, you know, everything ahead, and I think sometimes he doesn't realise maybe what's gone on in that day. And you've
to
had
achieve
to,
that.
Yeah, to achieve it, you know, sometimes I do get pissed off, if I can say that, you know, I've had to maybe put something off from my day just because I've had to wait in for the Skyman or somebody else coming, or, you know, going to get the food shop that just happens to appear in a fridge. Yeah. You know, it's kind of those things sometimes that I just like think, why, you have no clue.
Yeah.
Because I feel like, I'm not going to stereotype guys, but I just feel like Gary sometimes is in one focus, one vision, and whatever he's going to achieve in that day, he will.
Well, I read a story that you told in a magazine article, which I think sums this up, called, I would call it, Ingrowing Toenail Story, which was one of your daughters, I think it was Sophie, was it, who had an ingrowing toenail.
Yeah.
And you gone on a charity event. You were climbing mountains, Emma, and Gary rang you up quite cross because you hadn't sorted the ingrowing toenail out before you left. Gary, yeah, pick it up for us.
Go on, Gary.
Yeah, I mean, we used to have to take her to this doctor sort of like on a monthly basis to sort of have it sort of cut back, or else it would get quite sore for her and it would become infected. And I think she'd missed her appointment sort of the week before when Emma had left, and it sort of knocked me back a little bit, Gabby.
No, keep going. Make it squirm. I remember it well.
Well, that's like two or three hours of sort of like, you know, having to go and obviously take the doctor, have it.
Which people in relationships do all the time. I'd like to call them mums, but yeah, people do it all the time.
Yeah, I just, to be honest with you, you're absolutely right. I think I've got no defence, really. I mean, the thing that Emma says to me quite regularly is, you know, you're not present. I think a lot of people would recognise that in relationships, that, you know, you're always thinking about the next thing. You might be thinking about the game. You know, you might be having tea, but you might be thinking about the match tomorrow that you're commentating on, or you might be thinking about something else that you're doing. And then the other thing is just that, you know, to listen more and sort of participate more in sort of what would be the family life, which I think actually the last couple of months I probably have a little bit. I have a lot, in fact, because I found myself not being able to take my kids to school in the morning and pick them up in the evening. And I actually spent some time with Bex, and he told me that he took the kids to school on a regular basis and picked them up on a regular basis, and he always made time for that. And it made me feel quite bad that I didn't do that on a regular basis and those simple things. And they're sort of now 14, 15. They're embarrassed by me completely and don't want anything to do with me, the two girls. You know, tomorrow night we're going, the eldest has got a party at one of the restaurants in Manchester, and she doesn't want me to go, which I think is just where we're at in the cycle. But I think that I do need to participate more. I do think, I think I'm someone who, I don't know really. I love coming home to my family, and I love sort of, I always come home at 5 o'clock, but I go to bed quite early, like at 9 o'clock. And then I'm up early and I go to the gym. And I do always try and get into my day what I want to get into my day. And am I thinking about Sophie's toenail, to be fair,
no,
on Thursday evening at 4 o'clock? No, I'm not, Gabby. I'll be really honest with you. That, I really wanted that to have been dealt with.
Somebody has to. And it shouldn't always be the one person that has, because they're carrying a lot of other stuff as well, aren't they? And I think that's, you know, when you notice those things that the other person might need you to pick up the slack occasionally on, I think that is a really powerful kind of attribute to a relationship.
Am I abnormal though, Gabby? Or
no,
is it,
I think a lot of people will recognise this. And I, you know, I think particularly driven, and I would say goal driven, you know, and you're always looking for new things that are going to, you know, help people, things you do. It's not personally kind of always beneficial, is it? Things you're doing that kind of help the greater good and want to achieve. And I guess, you know, sometimes you've got to look at those things as they're also achievements, you know, being, as you said, present in your life is also an achievement, isn't it? And, you know, obviously you know, it took your friend David Beckham to point out that taking your kids to school is a nice part of the day.
Yeah. David, you've really rubbed off on him now.
Yes. Only took 14 years, but well done, David.
There are some sort of trigger points for me that just sort of like get me all the time. So like, if for instance, like if I get home and I look in the fridge multiple times, like literally I open the door of the fridge, I examine the fridge, what's in there, and it's like, let's say there is no milk in, or there is no sort of watering, or for some reason I'm like, oh my, that is like a trigger point for me. It's like,
Emma, pick up the fridge for us.
If my dairy milk's not in, my dairy milk's not there. I'm like,
dairy milk chocolate bar. There has to be a dairy milk chocolate bar in the fridge.
Yes. It's a bit like a child. I do feel sometimes you have three children in that moment of like, what? And I go, what are you looking for? What are you actually looking for? It's there in front of you. I won't say it's a dairy milk. It's usually there's no chips in. It's like a big... We've had many...
What kind of chips? What, oven chips?
Oh.
Triple cup Marks and Spencer's, Gabby, or the Fritz, right? So I don't eat... I think I did this... I said this a year or two ago. I don't eat like mashed potato, boulangerie potatoes, parmentier potatoes, boiled potatoes, new potatoes.
Don't give this man a dauphinoise. That's all I'm saying.
The dauphinoise. No, seriously, just cut the chip up, put it in a pan or put it in an oven and you have chips. It's honestly, I'm fine with that. Right. I grew up next to chippies.
Right.
So I know they're a bit healthy.
You know, you can
now,
change your eating habits, Gary. You know, I mean...
I know, but there's some things that I'm from Bury. It's where I grew up. It sort of runs in my family. And
there's something emotional. I think there's something emotional about these chips.
Attachment, I do. Mm. He always goes back to kicking a ball on a Friday. It might trigger him and he'll say, I used to kick outside on the garages and we'd have chippy every... Is it twice a week?
Yeah, two, three times a week, chippy, yeah.
Comfort in it, yeah.
There's definitely something to do with that kind of home, that longing for home somewhere, or something to do with your childhood, isn't there, that the chips signify.
So imagine there's no chips in the fridge or in there. Imagine.
Whoa, this whole fridge thing is interesting, actually, because even when I go back to my mum's house, I know there's going to be nothing in there really of interest to me. I still open the fridge door, because as a kid, that's what you did. You came in from school and you opened the fridge, didn't you? No matter whether you were hungry or not. But obviously, Gary's expecting the magic fridge filler to have done their job, Emma.
Yes.
So, and have you been to a supermarket lately, Gary?
Gabby, do you know something? When we were first together, we lived in Manchester, and I would do all the food shopping pre-kids. And actually, whilst I was a football player and you had afternoons off, I love going food shopping. And I still go food shopping now, Emma, don't I, sometimes?
Yeah, we'll give you a moment. But yeah,
I will.
It's not full shop.
It's not a full shop. There's some dairy milk and there's some triple cut chips.
Yeah, giant buttons or something. And it's like, we're going to eat.
Yeah, and throw a pack of blueberries in and everything's okay.
Yeah.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
So as a couple, you've worked out, I think somebody described it to me as your dance. You know, when you know, like there's a dance that kind of happens and somehow yeah. you know when you're leading, somehow you know when you're the, you know, you're not the leading man on the situation. But the I want to talk a little bit about the reason that, you know, I finally got you on the podcast, which is Emma's work as a menopause counsellor. Because when I spoke to you about this, Gary, we were doing a job together a few weeks ago and you were really kind of open and honest in the way you talked about Emma's menopause, which I thought was really lovely that you obviously were there, you knew what was going on, or you'd had some kind
of... I'm glad
you
did.
You tell us, Emma, tell us what was going on. Because this is what he said to me anyway.
He's picked himself up there, isn't he?
Well, he's obviously listened to you, because he said you had a very early menopause.
Yeah, so I don't mind sharing. As I say, I've opened up a page. I think it's 5 weeks old now. This is me. Just sharing with like-minded, you know, women my story about having an early menopause at 14, you know, nearly 41. And for me, yeah, it was huge at the time. I didn't understand I was in lockdown, perimenopausal, which with everything else that was going on in my life, I just put it down to stress and finishing a course and lockdown and just how life had changed. And I feel like I was in a lot of avoidance around that stage and I wasn't picking up because I didn't know anything about the menopause other than I think the one word that we mostly relate it to is a hot flush or a hot flash, as you know. So for me, there was lots of signs there, but I just wasn't tuning in to myself. I won't bore you because the story is long, but basically, yeah, ended up, you know, going down the route of some investigations and speaking to some specialists. But all the way through that journey, I was in total denial, I think just due to my age. Mm. And my mum had an early menopause at 40, right. And I do believe you follow your mum. Mm. So the more I was learning about it, I was getting quite fascinated with the topic. And I was like, you know, why don't I know about this? So I got diagnosed with POI, premature ovarian insufficiency. I'd had an ultrasound and there was no eggs, you know, left. And that in itself was kind of huge for me.
And you were how old again at this point when the scan happened?
40.
40,
yes.
Yeah. Which is still an age where a lot of people might be thinking about another child.
Yes, absolutely. So we'd obviously discussed that we was never having any more children. You know, we'd probably maybe a few years before that, you know, there was little linkly sometimes where you have a chat and just do another child. But we knew that, you know, family was kind of done. The girls were growing to an age and there'd be a huge age gap. So again, I do feel that it's something that's not discussed. But for me personally, that was kind of like a mini bereavement in itself because my body wasn't able to produce what it's always done anymore. And it was kind of like, gosh, you know, it's getting older, it's giving up on me and all those things that come with that are so emotional and heavy. But, you know, I worked through it and it did take me, you know, time. And then I got the HRT sent to me. And again, it took me some time to think. I've never been someone who's, you know, thank God I've had great health. I'm so lucky. I've never been on any medication or anything. But to me, it felt like, gosh, I've got to do this daily. I've never done anything like that before. So that was a really big side of going down that route for me. And then once I started it, within the 3 months, I thought, wow, I'm starting to feel back to me slowly. And that back to me had been gone for so long. And I am an emotional person, but I was so emotional around those times. And literally, I would cry at an advert. And I do tell a story that I remember one day the girl said to me, I think it was the older one, Molly said, could you get me some phyllo pastry, mum, for food tech? And I can't remember if it was Puff or Fila, one of them. Anyway, I got the wrong one. And she come in that morning and I got it out of the fridge to give her and she said, got the wrong one. And I just felt like I'd let her down. It was the weirdest feeling. And I cried all the way to school driving with these silent tears rolling down my face, like a let down mum. And I think one of them said to me, are you crying? And I was like, oh, it's just that story on the radio. I just bobbed it off because I didn't want to say how I felt. And I just thought, gosh, this is unbelievable. Like, how do I feel okay 1 minute and then not the next? And I was like, hormones are incredible. Wow.
And you were already on HRT at this point?
So, no, the HRT journey started 8 months after that, really.
Right.
I had some other investigations done and everything. And then it was sat there. I'd been kind of sent it from a specialist, but I wasn't sure.
Right.
I went herbal to start with, but again, I'd gone 6 weeks into that and I was feeling no different. And I just remember a friend who was, you know, in her menopause journey, and she was 52, I think, at the time, really close friend. And she just said, why are you struggling? And I said, I don't know. And it was just in denial. And she said, we just start it. We just stick that bloody patch on your arse and get on with it. And I was just like, I think I need to try this. So yeah, so I did. I'd say within the last year now, you know, I'm still tweaking, as I call it, my journey. And at the minute, as I spoke with my follow-up with my menopause specialist about probably 2 months ago now, she just said, at the minute, all the ingredients are right. So let's just keep that, you know, and at the minute, it's good. I do think about things that, how long am I going to be in this place and how long am I going to need HRT? Will I stay on it for life? You know, lots of questions and things that come around that. So, yeah, I just wanted to be open in my journey as a younger lady and that it can happen, because the amount of people that said to me, you can't have had an early menopause. And I'm like, well, I'm hearing them say I have. So, yeah, it was just a share in that space, really.
The online community is for people to have that ability to speak to other people in similar situations, or what are you hoping that you can achieve there?
Yeah, I do feel like it's kind of under the topic of well-being, but started with menopause because it's so current and I'm so, you know, I think it's my favourite word every day. I think I say it.
You do.
Yeah, I do. I know the girls tell me not talking menopause again. I'm like, yes.
You know, my kids say things to me like, oh, are you in the menopause? As if like, oh, I didn't realise. Oh, gosh. Yeah. I think it's healthy when teenagers know what the word is, because I'm not sure about you, Emma, but it was not something that was discussed in my house as an 18-year-old.
I can't get over that, you know, every woman's going to go through this journey, but it's just, yeah, I just can't believe it's like this taboo around it as well. So for me, having two girls, you know, my biggest learning was if they're going to start families, you know, maybe later on in their late 30s, I can't control the lives up, but I would be maybe just having that conversation and saying, you know, maybe don't leave it so late, or just, you know, trying to help them. So that was one thing that I can, you know, thank my menopause for, that it's brought me that, you know, understanding of that could happen to them.
Really important. And I think boys as well, Gary, because boys will either be married to women or they'll know women, you know, at work. They'll have women in their family somewhere. So your kind of take on what was going on, Gary, at the beginning, what did you think was happening? Because I'm guessing it wasn't something that you and Philip discussed as young boys growing up very often.
No, Gabby, that wasn't the... No, it wasn't the topic of conversation. I think, to be honest with you, when I think about it, I'm quite sort of pragmatic and quite sort of, you can imagine at the beginning, I would think
sort
of it
Emma,
like a,
sort it.
Yeah. So, yeah, in that accent as well. So I would say things like, and maybe it's not the right thing to say things like this, but I would always try and put sort of like a positive slant on it from a, not a motivational point of view, but if you were looking at sort of like a, from a leadership perspective, I was like, Emma, is it not better that you've had it early? Because you're fitter, you're healthier. So I would say things like, this could be a real bonus. You could be out of it by the time you're, you know, 43, 44. And then lots of other people maybe in their 50s don't feel as strong. I mean, obviously 50-year-old men and women now do feel strong. But, you know, is it going to be hard? Would it be harder for you to have it in your 50s than it would be maybe at the age of 40? And is this the best time to have it? So I tried that route to start with, but that didn't go down particularly well, Gabby.
Well done, Emma. You've timed it excellently.
I'm very
proud of you.
It's a bad plan. Yeah, exactly.
No, but I was trying to put a positive slant on it. I felt you could put a positive slant on it, because also the idea that we had decided that we weren't going to have any more children. So I think there was one day where I do remember Emma sort of, you know, really upset, and she was upset regularly, to be honest with you, around that time. But saying about the idea that she couldn't have children again was upsetting her, even though we didn't want to have children again.
And maybe there's a disconnect at that point slightly for you, because...
I think so. Yeah, because I'm thinking, if we wanted children again, then I get it completely. It would be obviously something that would be, you know, really upsetting. But actually, the fact we don't want children again, I couldn't see where the actual issue was there.
It's like a grief almost that some women have, because I think, you know, you'll experience this in a few years' time when your children start going off to university. There is this, oh my God, that, you know, this, the empty nest and all that feeling that, you know, although on the one hand, as Gary would say, well, look, Emma, we've got loads more time and it's, you know, our house is our own and there's crinkle cut chips for everyone in the fridge all the time. On the other side...
More dairy milk.
On the other side...
That was unbelievable. What a moment.
And it is a great achievement. I always, you know, say to people when we talk about empty nest, that the thing you want most in the world is your kids to kind of flourish and have the confidence to go, right? But at the same time, you're kind of missing their company and you're missing them in the, and you're missing them as, I mean, Kenny all the time sends me pictures of the kids at 4 and 5, you know, from his phone, that you miss those innocent little days. And so in the same way, I think some women, and not all, but some women, that connection to their periods is linked, isn't it, so much with that and all that possibility. And even though, Emma, and you didn't want any more children, or you know, you didn't think you did, it's taken away completely, Emma, isn't it? And it's that feeling that that is it.
It was. And I just started to think, gosh, I'm aging. Like, what's happening? You know, I'm kind of slowing down. And as much as I felt like I was, you know, I was fit and able to do exercise and all those things, it was just like all those unanswered questions. Like, what does that mean for me now? I've educated myself on it and done the menopause coaching certificate and everything. But now I understand that. But if you don't, it's overwhelming, it's scary. And yeah, I understand how can Gary understand parts of that. He's not built like us, and you know what our bodies can do is incredible. But as well, it was huge for me.
I felt that Emma was spiraling at that point into sort of like, obviously she was extremely hot all the time. There were concentration lapses that I'd not sort of seen before. So much more emotional, getting down about herself, doubting herself, questioning, you know, my body's changing, all the things that obviously happened in that period. And I knew these things were constant. And there is no manual for a man in a relationship to know how to deal with that, to be honest with you, either, because this is something that happens to every woman. So you're almost a little bit, as a bloke to start with, well, look, every woman goes through this, so let's just get on with it and get through it and it'll be over at some point. And that's sort of how I do think that's probably sort of how most men start to deal with it at the beginning. And, well, is this not a good thing? Because it's here now and you can get through it. And I don't think I was helping probably that much with my approach at that time. Not that I was doing anything wrong. I wasn't sort of saying, you know, be quiet, you're wasting. No. There was nothing like that.
Your normal way of dealing with problems was probably not right for this. The spreadsheet approach wasn't going to cut, was it? On this one.
But also trying to distract, say, should we go out for a meal, or trying to sort of, if you like, just
nice, you know, things. Let's do nice things.
Yeah. Move it away from sort of what would be the feeling of, because obviously when you're playing a football team, and I, the problem is with me, I relate everything back to being in a football team, which is just completely wrong. And if someone is struggling from a point of view of having negative thoughts, the first thing you try and do is get them thinking positively. And that might mean distract them, take them to a good place. You know, I don't know, you try and deal with it in a sort of functional way, in a sort of way which is, yeah, and this didn't seem to be working. I didn't seem to be hitting the sort of right notes, really.
But you, Gary, you know, will go through a very different kind of, you know, period of midlife. Things happen to men. They, you know, things change, and, you know, you find that kind of you might, I know you train a lot, but you'll have to train harder to get the same level of fitness and all those things. And a lot of men start to question, don't they, kind of, you know, their role in life and who they're, you know, especially when your kids leave and all that kind of thing. So, you know, there will be times when you might, you know, it might be coming in a few years' time, you might need some extra support. I'm sure you'll have a pragmatic approach to it. But Emma's clearly somebody who is very open to speaking to other people, both as a counsellor, and she's gone and sought out kind of help for herself. How good are you at doing that, at kind of offloading things to somebody else?
No, I don't offload anything to anybody, really. Is that true? That's true. I don't offload to anyone, do I?
No, if you can sometimes read on Gary and you think, oh, he's okay, but you know, there's something going on there, but it takes a lot for him to, you know, just say, oh, you know, what do you think about this? Or, you know, he does share, obviously, things that are going on in the work life and workplace and all those other things. But sometimes, yeah, you can tell he's just thinking it over. And you know he'll get there and he does it in his way. But I hope he always knows, obviously, that I'm always there to be that, you know, listening ear. But sometimes maybe, you know, you don't want to put that on somebody.
Is that because problems or challenges are a sign of weakness, Gary, that you just wouldn't want to open up to somebody about?
No, it's, to be honest with you, Gabby, it's probably more of a case of maybe two things. One is my upbringing with my mum and dad, where I don't believe that I ever saw... I don't think that will have ever happened in their lives where they came home and sort of like talked about their problems. You built to, and my grandparents, you built to get on with it, aren't you? And sort of like, yeah, get on with it. And I think in the football dressing room, you don't take your own personal problems into a dressing room. You know, you don't. In my era, you wouldn't sort of, you know, if you had a relationship breakup in your mid-20s, you wouldn't go in the next morning. You'd be really upset. And that happened to me. But you wouldn't go into the dressing room and say, lads, I'm really down. I'm struggling a little bit. You know, I had a relationship breakup. You didn't bring that stuff into the dressing room. So I think it's a way of life that I had probably growing up and then at United that means that why would I start doing it now in my mid-40s? You know, you've had a bad day. That happens. You expect every day to be a good day. No, you don't. So you get on with it. You just deal with it internally and you get on and sort of go home and don't bring your problems home. And that's really sort of how I probably, it's probably because of that really, I would think.
But obviously, we know that men, that can be a problem for men, that they don't share, they don't talk. And, you know, it's interesting. I see Kenny, my husband, has various groups of male friends. And I can see kind of like how certain groups that, you know, they'll go for a bike ride together and, you know, they're having a chat, or they might go. There's one particular group that they meet up once a month and have a drink and stuff. And three of the five of them have had divorces. Luckily, we're on the side that haven't in the last few years. And there's been, you know, lots of chat about that. And I think having those little groups are really important for a lot of men. Having male friendships as well is important. But I mean, I spoke to your brother Philip on this podcast and he said he has no friends at all. So and he wants to keep it that way, he said. So
the Nevilles have no friends. Yeah. Who just thought it?
He was very proud of it. I mean,
do you know something? If you knew our relationship, mine and Philip's, it is bizarre because we literally could not, I mean, Emmy, you speak to Philip more than me. You text Philip more than me. We don't text each other, how are you, what you're doing, what you're up. We don't do that. We just have never done that. And I don't do it with my sister either. And it's a little bit like that in the family. I mean, Emmy, you find it bizarre, don't you? Just the whole thing, really.
I do. I just, sometimes, you know, we're at the Bolton house and it's kind of Gary's mum's across the way. And I'm like, we never said hi to your mum and things. And I just, for me, it's just so naturally built in me, you know. I speak to my mum at least 5 to 3 times a day. I'm not saying that's healthy or not. You know, sometimes it's like, what? And it's that controlling part. But I feel like sometimes Gary just isn't, he's just in his space. Mm. And it's kind of like, I can't comprehend that you wouldn't go over and say hi to your mum just being so close. Yeah.
But she wouldn't, but just on the other hand, she doesn't come over and say hi to me, does she?
Does she know you're there all the time?
No, what I'm saying to you is that I'll say, mum, can I have a tuna butty? And I'll come over and have a tuna butty with her. And we have an amazing relationship with my mum. I mean, yesterday we went for lunch with her, and it's probably the first time in quite a bit with Tracy's little boy, Nev, because Tracy's in Australia. But that, I think Tracy sums up really, what Tracy's done in this last month sums us up pretty much to a T. Tracy was supposed to go over for Australia for 6 months and that was it. And then she's literally gone back for 2 years. She's just had a, you know, Nev's at home. Is he three? Yeah.
No, he's four, isn't he now?
Is he four? Anyway, our world is young.
Oh, let me guess who's in charge of birthday presents and cards in the family.
He's very young, Gabby. And I love him to bits. He's amazing. Took him out yesterday. Absolutely amazing. But yesterday I was there, I thought, Tracy, I texted a picture of him on our group. And Tracy replied, like, love heart. And Tracy's over in Australia on her own, just had a child on a 2-year contract, being a permanent coach for a new franchise. And I think that's mesmerising for her to actually leave a child, go over there for a professional career and a professional ambition. Honestly, to me, that's like hero status in my mind, that she has that ambition, that drive, that determination. And the fact that actually, I'm sure one day Nev, a little boy, will be proud of her and will recognise that what she wants to do. I hope that's the case. Do you understand what I mean by that?
Yeah, so, I mean, because actually, if a man was doing that, people wouldn't really question it, would they? They wouldn't question him going away.
And so she makes me really proud that, you know, ultimately that the way in which my mum is, my mum plays netball every single Monday and Thursday. She won't stop. She will do her own thing. The way in which my sister is like that. I am proud of that, that there is that drive and determination. And I wouldn't want to take that away from us.
It's interesting because on the one hand, family, it seems like talking to you and talk to Philip, family is everything, right? And it's the most important thing. But and then on the other hand, you know, drive and pursuing your goals and your dreams is also important. And somehow, you know, you're managing to kind of like have both of them as important pillars in your life. But in a way that I imagine, Emma, is totally different to, say, what your family that you've come from would have done. And I would love to kind of be a fly on the wall when the spouses all get together, you know, and discuss the Nevilles, because I bet you've kind of all got a different take on what you bring to this dynamic, Emma.
It was funny, yeah. I always remember my mum waves you off at the door, like, till you've gone round the corner, and I'm like beeping, you know. And like sometimes Gary's family would come in, they wouldn't even say hello, kind of hello. You knew you were there, but he wouldn't be like, hi, how are, and I couldn't get my head around it at the start. And I'll never forget the first time I went to meet the family, and it was at Gary's mum and dad's, and they were all sat there, and everyone was around. So it's, you know, it's a biggie, everyone's, you know, looking at you. And I remember we was watching something on TV, so we had it on trays on our laps, and Jill came in, and I was obviously the guest, but Gary got his first, and it was like, it just made me like, oh my gosh, this is going to be, yeah.
An interesting ride.
But my mum will literally leave without saying bye, won't she?
Yes, yeah.
Honestly, we're going out for a meal tonight so I was away last week when it was Molly's 15th birthday, so we're going tonight to our local Italian. And my mum, at the end of the meal, she will literally, at the end of, she eats quicker than anybody, and she'll say, right, and she'll just go. And it's amazing, I love it. It's like, she's finished what she came to do, she said hello to everyone, she's had a meal with everyone, right, she wants to go home now, she wants to get home and do her own stuff. Amazing.
I
love that.
It is, but it's perhaps quite peculiar. It's...
So, not you know, but.
No, not the norm, but everybody's happy.
Yeah. Everyone's buzzing.
So on the family WhatsApp group, is there a Neville siblings WhatsApp group?
No, so I'm not on WhatsApp, so they have their own group without me, so I don't get to know what's going on. But we have a text group, an iMessage group, which I'm on, which has got my mum, my sister, sister's partner Michael, Emma, Molly and Sophie.
Right.
So there's six of us on it, and it's called the Bolton Nevilles, basically. And that's the one that I communicate on, but I'm not on the one with Philip and with Julie, Harvey and Isabella, which is a bit sad, really. So I need to go... That's the one reason I would go back onto WhatsApp, just to be on that group, I think.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good idea, because if you're not... if you haven't got masses of mates that you're confiding in, then this lot are quite important, Gary. I think you need to keep the communication going. So you mentioned David Beckham earlier as somebody who told you to take your kids to school and get some time. Would he be somebody? I know you guys are still really close. Would you ever ring him up and go, mate, I'm struggling a bit at the moment. I just can't get my mojo's gone, or I just feel a bit.
I would go to him, I think, if there was a real problem. But it'd have to be a real significant problem.
Would he have an answer for you? Or would he just listen? Is he?
I think he'd give me time, and he would do pretty much what he wanted to do. But honestly, it would have to be a significant problem, because I would think he's got so much going on in his life. The last thing he needs is my problem. I wouldn't take it to him. So that's how I would think, just generally, because everyone else has got their own problems. Everyone else has got their own stuff going on. So actually, and I do think it's brilliant now that, you know, we are in an age where people are willing to share their problems. But I'm still sort of from that, what would be still, I think, a little bit sort of 80s, 90s sort of era, whereby if you can deal with it yourself, and sometimes a problem is just dealt with by time. You're just letting things pass and not really actually interfering with it sometimes. I think if it takes, obviously, if it goes on for a few weeks, and I did go and see a psychiatrist when I was playing, Gabby, when I had that relationship breakup and I lost my form pre the 2000 euros, when I really struggled. I did go and see someone then, because I was struggling for about 5-6 months and it wasn't going away. And I've talked about that only since, obviously, in my book and stuff after I finished. But, you know, ultimately that was the lowest point that I'd had. And then in Valencia, I really struggled in Valencia. Confidence, lost my confidence. Emma struggled. The kids struggled because they didn't like the school.
So who helped you then? Or did you just wait for it to go away?
I think we just waited. We came home every day, obviously, to the house. Emma's dad came with us for that 4 months. And Emma's dad's a really good influence on my life, in the sense that he's so calming. And when he's here, I like it when he's here, because it sort of brings a peace to the house. It's like, you know, my dad's not here anymore. My dad wasn't like that. My dad was, to be fair, a little bit like frantic and everything's got, you know, go and let's go and do something. Whereas Emma's dad's really peaceful. So I can sit here with Emma's dad and we can sit here, honestly, and I can be in this seat here and Emma's dad will sit there. We can watch a game of football and not speak to each other for 90 minutes.
That's your dream.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I didn't say.
You know something, peace is amazing sometimes when you live a frantic life. Yeah. And I'll say, unless, you know, every 20 minutes, John, would you want a beer? Do you want a glass of wine? And you'll say, yeah, no problem. And we'll watch, say, a Champions League game, United. And I really love that. I really like that. I do that quite a bit, don't we? It's nice to have peace sometimes. I don't know what the question was.
Well, no, it's interesting because you found some way. It sounds like, is it John you just said then, Emma's dad? John, obviously, yeah. Emma can bring some calm to Gary in some way. He's almost like your kind of human yoga. His presence is enough to just kind of, which it's finding those things, isn't it? Because I think that's what a lot of people on the outside, Emma, might think. When does Gary Neville turn off? We all heard you on the Diary of a CEO podcast, Discover What a Holiday Is, which was, you know, a mini retirement, you said, and the weekends. So I guess making sure, you know, because that's our job sometimes as partners, isn't it, Emma? To, you know, the person that we're with, you just notice things and make sure that those things are in place and that they have a bit of time to just come off that schedule.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I know Gary does sometimes, you know, he comes home and he's done however many meetings and whatever he's achieved and he just wants to, you know, sit upstairs, have us a little call and meet, like everyone meet up top floor, you know, 8 o'clock. And it's kind of like military and it's like, right, if we're not there because we've got things to do or we're just washing our hair for the morning and getting organised, it's like, then he sulks a bit, you know, he's a bit of a sulker. So, but that's his downtime and it's like being with us, you know, just all sat together with a blanket on, whatever, watching, you know, whatever, usually football and we're doing our own thing on our own devices, kind of, yeah. When football's not on, we do try and, you know, watch something as a family. So I'd say Gary is, he does know how to wind down and chill down, and it is coming home to the place where he feels, you know, he's at peace. Yeah,
but I think when we first met, and Emma, I've said this to you obviously jokingly since, but when we first met, the first night we went out together, we went back to my apartment with 3 or 4 friends, and we were just sat in the lounge, and we didn't speak that much, but the silences weren't awkward. Do you know what I mean by that? Actually, the idea that you feel like you have to fill every... And I speak so much, Gabby, in my life. I mean, I never shut up, as you know. But when I come home, I like not speaking and peace. And sometimes that drives Emma crazy because she actually wants to hear from me and sort of talk to me and stuff. And I just, that's probably why in some ways we get on so well together, because Emma's like a dad. She's really peaceful. I like that calming influence. And it sort of just... Imagine if I came on someone who talked as much as I do or as frantic as I am.
Yeah.
It would just be absolute.
The energies wouldn't be, I think, aligned, would they? So as you said yin and yang at the beginning, actually, of the conversation, Emma, and I think that's what's coming through, is that you complement each other in the ways that is a reason why you're still happily married, in spite of Gary's attempt to spreadsheet the menopause.
Spreadsheet the menopause.
I just want to ask you about girls, because obviously having two girls as well is, you know, that's a different energy in the house, and they're sporty girls, they're busy girls, and you work with a charity called Girls Out Loud, Emma, as well, which I think is important probably in how you've looked at parenting girls as well in this day and age.
Yeah, I did. Like, you do a full year with them and you go into schools to do some mentoring with girls. It's called the Big Sister Programme. So I was a big sister to this young girl and she was 15 at the time. So my girls weren't at that age. I'm thinking going back, must be 2 years now since I did that. But I found it fascinating, and it was just the... how, like, sitting and talking, and I got as much from her as, you know, she was getting kind of from me, and we were doing crafts or different activities that they provide in that space. You sat in a classroom environment, but it's a different feeling. And it was just amazing to hear what they were getting up to, and I was thinking, gosh, that's going to be our girls soon, you know, and how they socialise and all those other things. And, yeah, I do feel like there was a lot of talk about, you know, devices, and I remember being in a conversation and it learnt something like, I went out with my friends at weekend and they took a picture of me and I didn't like it and they posted it. And I just remember thinking, gosh, when I used to go out with my friends, we probably would get, you know, take all day to mind to get ready, but it would be a different ready. We'd all get each other's houses and everything. But we were able to go out and, I want to say, ugly laugh and not have our hair in place and all those things. And I just thought, wow, this is a different... I couldn't be a teenager again, a teenage girl. It was, yeah.
It's interesting you say that. I took the kids to school yesterday, Gab, because I'm
amazed, you're a Renaissance man. Yeah.
And we got there early. I stopped some snacks and a coffee at the garage, and I tried to take a picture with my daughter.
Right. That's not happening.
No, it's not happening. I literally got that.
So your daughter there has got a hand over her face.
I mean...
And did you have a conversation about it afterwards? Because you know, I've been through these situations with bikers as well, where you kind of go, and afterwards they go, I don't like my hair today, or I'm not looking, you know. And of course, you as a parent think, you look beautiful, you look amazing, you look gorgeous. How do you deal with that then, Gary? Because obviously Emma's had her kind of insight into a little bit earlier into those teenage girls with Girls Out Loud.
Yeah, it's the one thing that I find... Because at the moment, I've never found any stage of their development. Everyone says, don't they, oh, this is the most challenging period. And you feel like someone says that every 2 or 3 years. Oh, this is a difficult period. And you get through it. But you get that. And then I think now, obviously, as they obviously are entering into a period where people recognise as being quite difficult, the one thing that they don't want to be with me. So yesterday, they made me drop them off literally about 100 metres away from the school. Honestly, I said, yeah, but it's quite cold and it could even rain. Don't worry about it, it's fine. So I had to drop them off at the garages. It's about 50 to 100 metres away from the school.
How's your ego on that?
That disappoints me a little bit, because I'm thinking, am I an embarrassing dad? Am I literally the embarrassing dad in the school? Like, and then the other thing was the picture. I try and take a picture with them. It's nice to have a picture with them, and they just do not want it at all. There's no part of them wants any interaction with me publicly. And tomorrow night, they don't want me. So they're going out for a meal, my eldest daughter, with their 2 or 3 friends. And even Emma's had to book a separate table with my youngest daughter, because obviously it's in the centre of Manchester, so we don't really want them to be in a restaurant on their own at 15. So Emma's had to book a separate table. I thought the kickoff time for Man City Liverpool was 5 o'clock. So I didn't think I'd be able to go, but I found out earlier on in the week, because I've been away, it's 12:30. So I'm actually available to come. So I told her on the way to school yesterday, I'm actually coming to the meal at, you know, 5:30 on Saturday. I can come, because she said, no, Mum says you're working. I went, no, I'm not working now. I got the kickoff time wrong. She said, you're not coming. You're not coming. You can't come. I'm like, I told you, Emma, didn't I? I said, she actually does not want me to come. She was deadly serious. Yeah. And I'm like, I think I like you and you like me. What's the problem here?
Embarrassing dad.
Yeah, and you've got to suck that up for a few years, I think, because
that's like quite difficult, that, really, because I don't feel like I embarrass her or do anything sort of like, that's a little bit difficult.
Yeah, I think as long as kind of in the home, she still feels like you talked about snuggling up on the sofa with a blanket, as long as she still kind of wants to do that, then you've got to let her have that period of, you know, not wanting to, it's not that she doesn't like you. She's actually deeply, probably, you know, massively in awe and admires you. But there are just moments where she's going to need her space, isn't she? And I think as parents, it's like, you don't need me in the same way. And that really is hard. And it's hard as a mum, yeah. Emma, isn't it? But
it really is.
You find that difficult, Emma, don't you?
Yeah, this teenage stage has been a little bit like, oh gosh, they've always been really kind of willing to go and do their own thing, and we all have all come together, but really independent. And now I'm like even more so, like, what do I, like, obviously make the food and everything, but really they'll get up and they've got themselves ready and I'm not putting a bow in the hair or doing their own ponytails, and it's kind of like, oh yeah, I do miss it.
I think that's where holidays become even more important, because they can't afford their own holidays, right? And I know holidays are a new concept to you, Gary, but I think more holidays is what happens. It's how you get them away.
No, honestly, Gabby, you're absolutely true. Do you know something? About 4 or 5 weeks ago, though, when I started, you know, I do take them to school. I do take them to school.
I think we've established that, Gary. We've established that you take them to school.
But actually, they can't escape in the car, can they?
No, exactly.
They have to be in the car, so there's no sort of like getting away from me almost. I've got them for 30, 40 minutes whereby they're trapped and they have to have a conversation with me, and I can actually sort of speak to them. So Yeah, I've recognised that. It's a bit late, 14, 15, but I got...
No, you've got a few years, though, of taking them to school. I keep the schools being kind of far enough away and not on a bus route, so you're still important. I think that's the key, isn't it? Guys, I could chat to you both, I think, for a lot longer, because I think there's areas that, you know, we've still got to kind of scratch the surface of, but it's been really great, kind of the dynamic of your relationship and how everything's going for you, Emma, on your new online community. And best of luck with those lovely girls. I'm sure they're going to smash it in the world of sports somewhere one day. They're obviously good netballers, aren't they, like your sister? So many more Nevilles. Many more Neville sporting greats to come. Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Huge thanks to Emma and Gary. I feel like we all went through some couples therapy there. But it was also so great to hear both of their experiences in midlife, and woe betide, there are no oven chips in the freezer. And what Emma's done, I think, is so inspiring. I think a lot of people will relate to that feeling in midlife of searching for yourself and your purpose again. And she's obviously thriving now. Check out her page, This Is Me, for support if you're going through the menopause. And please leave me a rating, or even better, a review, to let me know if you're enjoying the show and what you'd like to hear more of. You can also join our Facebook group, The Midpointers, and connect with other listeners. This episode was produced by Spiritland Creative, and I'll be back next Wednesday with more musings on midlife. I'll catch you then.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.